You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 21st of September 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today it's the equinox, 12 hours of darkness and 12 hours of light. The year is racing past, and we have some really quite entertaining and positive news to begin the show with. I happened to see this clip last night, and I do recommend that listeners check out this news clip to watch for themselves. Essentially, what we have is a left-wing news anchor talking to a royal commentator and expecting the royal commentator to agree that reparations should be paid for slavery. But the royal commentator points out that it was in actual fact the black African chiefs that were kidnapping and selling the black African slaves. It wasn't white people that were getting something for free here. The white people were ending up having to pay roughly about £10,000 for each of these slaves, and then they had to pay for their upkeep, their food, their medication, a roof over their heads. But the black African chiefs that kidnapped them were not paying out anything at all for them. So all the wealth that was generated was really going to these African chiefs. And of course, this is something that we've been pointing out here at Radio Albion for a long time, that if there are going to be any reparations or some kind of compensation, it should really be these black African chiefs that the people that want the compensation end up going to. CNN anchor Don Lemon was at a loss for words after a royal commentator told him slavery reparations are necessary, but said they should be paid by the descendants of African kings who sold their own people into slavery. And she wasn't just saying this either. She was actually saying that there should be some form of compensation to the white sailors that ended up losing their lives trying to put a stop to the slave trade. So many of these white sailors, I think thousands of them, could be hundreds of thousands of them, ended up dying from tropical fever when the British Navy had to go to Africa and form a blockade to prevent the black African chiefs from continuing to sell black Africans as slaves. And all their families had to put up with them dying. I mean, masses of them died trying to put a stop to slavery. It also cost an absolute fortune to do this. We ended up having to pay compensation to all the slave owners. You think that they'd paid out £10,000 each for these slaves? So we bought the freedom of these black Africans to then be told that we need to be paying some kind of reparations to them when we have already paid these reparations. We've already paid the cost of freeing them, manumission. It certainly wasn't their black African chiefs that paid the costs of the manumission. The black African chiefs refused to stop engaging in slavery, and it still goes on today in Libya. Lemon interviewed Hilary Fordwich on September the 13th, following Queen Elizabeth II's death, and suggested the British royal family should pay reparations for the transatlantic slave trade. And why is it they think the royal family made all the money out of this? It wasn't the royal family that were making lots of money out of this. It was everybody that was involved in it was making something out of it. I mean, even the slaves were. If the slaves had remained in Africa, they would have been used as human sacrifices, and they would have been tortured to death, they would have been eaten, they would have had awful things that were happening to them in Africa. When they were taken to America, they were given clothes to wear, they were given a house to live in, they were given a garden in order to provide their own crops, they were fed, they were watered, they were healthy, and in exchange they were expected to pick fruit or pick cotton. They were paid in kind, and they were well looked after. And don't forget that these slave owners were Christian men. They were God-fearing men who looked at what it said in the Bible about slavery, and that was how they taught their slaves. They even paid for preachers to come and preach to them and teach them Christianity and get them to obey Christian laws. And on the whole, these slaves looked upon their masters as their family. When the master died, the slaves would be in tears. The children of the slave-owning family would be brought up alongside the slaves, and they would work alongside them as well. It was nowhere near as horrific as what was going on in Africa. So everybody that was involved in this slave trade, even the slaves themselves, were actually benefiting. And of course, white people benefited from it because we were unable to bear the heat and the tropical diseases in the deep south of America, which is why the black Africans were so good at working there, because they were used to the heat, they were used to the tropical sun, so that we were able to grow cotton and grow fruit, and that made a living for the plantation owners. And as I say, the slaves themselves were paid in kind, and they were looked after. And in actual fact, when they were freed, they said, well, who's going to look after us now? Who is going to look after us now? And what actually happened when they were freed, lots of the plantation owners actually gave them land, and they gave them implements so that they could continue working the land as they had learned how to do. But then we had all these carpetbaggers and people from the north that went down to the south and started riling them up and getting them involved in gambling and getting them drinking and teaching them bad habits. And they ended up gambling away a lot of the land and a lot of the implements and getting themselves into a state. And in some ways, you can look back at slavery times and you can think, well, in some ways, black people were better off. They certainly didn't have the crime problems that they have now within their community. It was unheard of black people to murder another black person, for instance. And yet today, we see terrible instances of murder and violence and crime that goes on within their community. I'm not saying that they would be better off today as slaves. I'm just saying that actually in the time of slavery, things weren't as bad as they're made out to be today. So it's good to see that this was reversed. This idea of reparations was being reversed on a mainstream channel here. In the interview, which went viral on Twitter this week, Fordwich responded by arguing that African leaders were responsible for supplying millions of enslaved people to European slave traders, saying that reparations should come from African nations. And she's entirely correct there. That's where all the wealth was made. A stunned Le Monde responded that it was an interesting discussion and quickly concluded the interview. He was not expecting to hear somebody say that. And of course, that is the basic facts of the matter. It was the black African chiefs that were selling the black Africans. That was the economy in Africa. It had gone on for thousands of years. And that was just the way that Africa was run. And if you think about it, we had these African chiefs and they wanted tobacco. They wanted guns. They wanted cloth. They wanted the things that that the white man actually had. But all the black African had to exchange for them was ivory and other black Africans. And that was just the way that it was. And it wasn't until we colonized Africa that we taught them how to extract their own resources. And we put railways in there. We put roads in there. And we enabled them to bring their produce down to the docks on the coast so that they could then trade with the rest of the world. And it was a very, very hard job to get them to stop selling slaves, but we did manage to eventually prevent them from doing it. It took about 100 years. And the whole point of colonizing Africa was so that we could stop them from doing the slave trade. I mean, while the slave trade was going on, we just had these bits on the coast where we would go to pick up the slaves from the black African chiefs. And then David Livingstone went to Africa and he said, well, the way we can stop this horrific trade in human beings is if we colonize the place and get them to start making their own products out of their own resources so that they can then trade with the rest of the world. From the 16th to the late 19th century, at least 12 million African men, women and children were enslaved and transported to the Americas, where they were traded as chattel property, primarily by Europeans and Euro-Americans. And it's not as if black people were the only slaves in history either. In the 15th and the 16th century, there were Moroccans, corsairs that came over from Africa to Europe and kidnapped Europeans to take them back to the Ottoman Empire to use as slaves. I mean, some people say that it was at least 1 million white people that were actually taken as slaves at this period. Then, of course, we have in Roman times when and in Greek times when half the population were actually slaves, and there were white people that were being enslaved. We have in the Bible, it talks about the master and the slave, and it's very clear that that was the system that we had back then. That was the system that we had for employment. So there's nothing unique about black Africans capturing other black Africans and selling them as slaves. I mean, it was the same thing with Romans capturing barbarians and selling them to each other as slaves. And we also had people that went into slavery because they got into debt. And the only way to pay the debt off would be through selling yourself as a slave for a certain number of years. While many Africans resisted the slave trade, others did actively participate in it by capturing and enslaving other Africans and bringing them to slave castles on the West and Central African coast to sell to European traders. The Africans that resisted it were sort of like the Bushmen and the Pygmies. They weren't able to actually go out and capture other Africans themselves. They were captured by the bigger black Africans, because the Bushmen and the Pygmies are much smaller. But the whole of Africa was based in it, was involved in this. All you have to do is look back at the explorers' reports about Africa, and it continued. After the British stopped the transatlantic slave trade, the black Africans continued to sell other Africans internally within Africa. If they wanted to stop it, all they had to do was form a unified government and say, right, we're going to stop doing this. We're going to stop selling each other. But they didn't, and they refused to do so, even when the British Empire said, look, we are going to make you stop selling each other as slaves. They still refused to. In the interview, Lemon had asked Fordwich, well, this is coming when all of this wealth, and you hear about it, comes as England is facing rising costs of living, a living crisis, austerity, budget cuts, and so on. And then you have those who are asking for reparations for colonialism. And they're wondering, you know, 100 billion, 24 billion here and there, 500 million there. Some people want to be paid back, and members of the public are wondering, why are we suffering when you have all of this vast wealth? Those are legitimate concerns. So he thinks that colonialism is something that needs to be compensated for. Well, how about all the technology and the civilization that colonialism brought? I mean, all you have to do is look at India with the railways, universities, hospitals, roads, telecommunication system, all of those things it didn't have until the British went there. And it's the same thing with Africa. If it wasn't for the British going there, they wouldn't even have electricity. And yet here they are asking for reparations when they've already been given so much of the white man's wealth already, just out of the charity and the kindness of the white man's heart. Well, Fordwich answered, well, I think you are right about reparations in terms of if people want it, though. What they need to do is you always need to go back to the beginning of a supply chain. Where was the beginning of the supply chain? That was in Africa. And when it crossed the entire world, when slavery was taking place, which was the first nation in the world that abolished slavery, the first nation in the world to abolish it, it was started by William Wilberforce, it was the British, she said. In fact, Haiti was the first country to legally abolish slavery, which was banned there from the country's foundation in 1804, following a revolt against the French colonial government. Well, that's what it says here in the news report. What actually happened was the Haitians saw what was going on with the French Revolution in France, and they rose up and they slaughtered all the white slave masters. And once they finished slaughtering the white slave masters, they went after all the mulattoes, and they slaughtered all the mulattoes. And eventually there was just blacks there. And what was a paradise, I mean, it was described as an island paradise, is now a fourth world country. It's in a terrible state of affairs. And of course, Haiti has had terrible catastrophes happen with hurricanes and what have you. But the Americans have gone in there to try and fix it. two or three times now. I think they've gone in there and sent them loads of money to try and fix it. But it's just a terrible state. So to say that Haiti was the first country to legally abolish slavery, as if they did the same thing as the British did, which is pay a lot of money so that the slaves could all get manumission, that isn't what happened there. What happened there is they just slaughtered all the white people. They didn't legally abolish slavery. They just slaughtered all the whites. Despite the legal prohibition, slavery and human trafficking by criminal organisations remain prevalent in Haiti today, with an estimated 59,000 people there still living in modern slavery, according to the Global Slavery Index. And of course, it goes on in Saudi Arabia, goes on in a lot of the countries in Africa as well. Apparently, it goes on in Kuwait. This big football stadium has been built with some slaves, apparently. Britain, in 1833, passed the Abolition of Slavery Act, ordering the gradual abolition of slavery in all British colonies. And then we spent about 100 years actually preventing the black Africans from continuing to sell slaves to the rest of the world. Ford, which continued, in Great Britain, they abolished slavery. 2,000 naval men died on the high seas trying to stop slavery. Why? Because the African kings were rounding up their own people. They had them on cages, waiting in the beaches, and no one was running into Africa to get them. And I think you're totally right. If reparations need to be paid, we need to go right back to the beginning of that supply chain and say, who was rounding up their own people and having them handcuffed in cages? Absolutely. That's where they should start. And maybe, I don't know, the descendants of those families where they died in the high seas trying to stop the slavery. Those families should receive something too, I think, at the same time. I mean, isn't that absolutely wonderful that she said that on a mainstream television news channel? The royal commentator's response immediately silenced Lemon as he decided to conclude the interview. It's an interesting discussion, he said. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We will continue to discuss it in the future. It's absolutely wonderful to see, absolutely fantastic. I do recommend people watch that. This woman, Fordwich, she's an absolute heroine for bringing this up and speaking the truth on CNN. The transatlantic slave trade was the largest forced migration of people in human history, involving human suffering on an unimaginable scale. And of course, it was a lot of suffering on those boats getting from Africa to America. But you have to bear in mind that it wasn't very nice for the sailors either. And the whole point of this was to get the slaves to America alive. They didn't want them to die because they were worth so much money. So I think there is some exaggeration there on how they would pack them all into the hold. And because if they were packed in such a way that they were likely to die, then that it doesn't make sense, does it? Why they would be doing that? Because they wanted to be making a profit. And of course, it did involve a lot of human suffering. But then white people suffered a lot at that time as well. These sailors, a lot of them died, as I say, because of these tropical diseases. And also, I mean, what's worth more money to you, the white sailor or the black slave? Surely they're going to be more interested in feeding the black slave that they can sell for £10,000 when they get to America, rather than feeding the white sailor that they probably only had to pay, I don't know, £50 a trip to. And it doesn't really make sense, does it, that they would be allowing these slaves, this very, very precious cargo, to arrive in America in a bad condition or to die on the way over there. Some African leaders and traders did play a role in enslaving other Africans, usually from other ethnic groups, and selling them to European traders. I mean, it was pretty much all of them that were involved in this. It was seen as a great thing to own slaves. That was what your wealth was. In order to show that you had a lot of wealth and you were a big man, you had to have a lot of slaves, basically. And what they would do is when the slave owner would die, they would sacrifice and just slaughter all his slaves. And that sort of thing, of course, never happened in America with the Europeans that owned the slaves. Because Europeans were often unable to penetrate very deeply into the African continent, they instead built a network of slave castles on the coastline and engaged local middlemen to bring them new victims. Well, I would disagree with that. I would say that that wasn't because they were unable to penetrate into the African continent and capture them themselves. white people never tried to go out and capture black people as slaves. It was always that they were already enslaved people when the white people bought them. And I dare say a lot of the whites thought, well, this is going to be so much a better life for these slaves to be looked after by white Christian men in America rather than to be looked after by these cannibals in Africa. Historians say that many of the enslaved victims were captured during warfare between rival African groups, although some of them were kidnapped and sold purely for profit, according to an article from the College of Charleston. I think a lot of them were kidnapped and sold for profit, but you also had ones that ended up in debt, and also ones that were just taken in war. In 2019, Nigerian novelist Adobe Tricia Nwobani wrote a thought-provoking guest essay in the Wall Street Journal about the issue of African complicity in the slave trade. Europeans oversaw this brutal traffic in human cargo, but they had many local collaborators, she wrote. The anguished debate over slavery in the US is often silent on the role that Africans played, the author added. That silence is echoed in many African countries, where there is hardly any national discussion or acknowledgement of the issue. Of course, because they don't feel any guilt over it. Nobody's going to bring it up because the black African chiefs feel no guilt over it whatsoever. It's just white people that end up feeling guilt over it. And mainly, I think that is because they don't really know the true history of it. They just see the Hollywood version. And all you have to really do is just go back and look at the original source material to find out about this. We actually have some Albion narrations that are coming up looking at what life was like for the slaves in the plantation era. So I recommend people check them out when we finally end up publishing them. Royal commentator Fordwich is a global business consultant and a regular media contributor, according to her Women's Media Centre profile. She is a national royal watcher for networks including Sunday Morning, CNN, and CBS, and she has covered every royal wedding since William and Kate. Well, let's hope that some of these other royal watchers and royal commentators are aware of the same things that Fordwich is, and end up talking the truth like this to other commentators that are interviewing them. Some on Twitter speculated that Lemon's lack of response to Fordwich was a result of CNN's new policy to not bash conservatives and deliver fair news amidst the recent wave of layoffs of infamous liberal journalists at the media group. Well, that's interesting. So CNN they've looked at their declining viewing figures, and they're now talking about maybe going a little bit right wing. Maybe that's going to get them more viewing figures than all this left wing progressive stuff that they put on there. Le Monde spoke up for the first time on Thursday about CNN's latest shake-up and dubbed the change a promotion. He insisted that the network wasn't making him change his left-leaning views after his colleagues, who were overly critical of Donald Trump and the GOP, were fired. This is not someone saying you must move to the right, Don Lemon, and must not give so much of your perspective. None of that has happened, Lemon said. All of that is fodder for Twitter. I was not demoted. None of that. This is an opportunity. This is a promotion. Lemon's new production with Harlow and Collins will replace The New Day Show, hosted by John Berman and Brianna Keller, that runs from 6 to 9 a.m. So it's going to be on breakfast TV. I dare say if he was on in the evening, then that is a demotion, really, isn't it? The call is one of CNN's new CEO Chris Licht's most prominent decisions as he seeks to get rid of and steer the outlet away from opinion-based partisan news and anchors who slam conservatives and the GOP. It does look as if there's a big swing back away from these liberal progressive ideas, as I spoke about yesterday in Sweden with this move to the right. And it looks like there's going to be a move to the right in Italy. Obviously, half of America supports Donald Trump, and these left-wing progressives that you actually have in government in America are alienating half the country. And this does show in the viewing figures. I do know that CNN's viewing figures are absolutely dire, as are all these left-wing promoting outlets. I mean, the Guardian, the newspaper in Britain, that would never actually stand on its own two feet if it had to actually make a profit from what it's sold for. It's all these left-wing backers that keep the newspaper going. CNN has been purging itself of the reputation of being a woke media source since Licht pledged to make the network reliable to the people again by halting the slander of Republicans. The new movement has resulted in the termination of popular CNN hosts, including John Harwood and Brian Stelter, along with their shows. Licht previously warned CNN staffers that changes to the network were coming to the network and that they would not understand them or like them. Ah, very interesting. I guess it's just market forces. They will still be promoting the left-wing progressive stuff, I should imagine, but they will be promoting it when it's promoted by the right, I should imagine. Well, I've got another news story here. I don't know if we've really got enough time to get into it, but it is certainly illuminating how black people think that any criticism of them must be based in racism and nothing else. A Scottish accountant insists he and his hiking friends never break the rules, but are branded litterbugs and reported to rangers by other walkers because they are black. Well, nobody reports them to the rangers because they are black. They must be reporting them because some of them have left litter there, surely. Enoch Adeyemi is co-founder of Black Scottish Adventurers and often ventures out to the Trossachs National Park with groups of up to 60 walkers. The father of two is passionate about getting black people to get into hiking, but he says the Scottish outdoors is very white and that they stick out when they go exploring. Well, obviously they're going to have to expect to stand out, aren't they? Because the countryside isn't really where a lot of black people want to be. They would rather be in the cities, and white people do like the countryside. I mean, white people are going to really appreciate the countryside because it's their ancestors that built it and cared for it. And it reflects what we think as white people. It reflects what we think is beautiful. It may not reflect what most black people think is beautiful. I mean, that could be one of the reasons why more white people go to the countryside than black people. I don't think there's anything to do with racism in there. He claims that some white people assumed that this is their space and they got really peed off when they spot black walkers. The keen hiker says that every group hike is plagued by incidents where white ramblers make condescending comments, asking them not to leave litter behind and to turn their music off. So quite clearly, the black hikers are playing loud music, something which people like to go hiking to get away from. And if they hadn't actually left any litter behind, surely all they had to do is say, well, look, that's not our litter. Obviously, they weren't able to say that, were they? Because people were saying, look, you've left litter behind. The Nigerian-born hiker also slammed park rangers, claiming they perpetuate the cycle of ignorance by taking such complaints seriously and confronting them about it. So he's effectively saying that because they're black, the park rangers should just not confront them about it at all. The park rangers should just assume that the white people that are complaining about the noise are only doing it because of racism, not because they genuinely don't like hip-hop and rap music being played loudly on a mountain. Loch Lomond and the Trossachs National Park Authority said their rangers have the same approach for all individuals and groups, regardless of ethnicity or background. But they added that they strive to make the national park a place that is accessible and welcoming to all, and they take Mr. Adeyemi's complaints very seriously. So they're saying, look, we're not racist, we just have to act on complaints. And surely people are showing the evidence for the complaints, aren't they? They are showing the litter and saying, look, this is the litter that this group left behind. And surely we have an admission here from this Mr. Adeyemi that his group were playing loud music. I mean, he's very proud of the fact they're playing loud music. And that was the complaint that the white hikers were making. Mr. Adeyemi from Edinburgh, Scotland, said, my post on LinkedIn is about the negative side of going out in the mountains. When we go hiking, we don't see other black people hiking. Hiking is seen as a white people thing. Not that there's anything wrong with that. White people generally hike, black people generally don't. It is what it is. White folks are so used to going out and only seeing other white folks, so I think it was a shock to the system when we started going out hiking in groups. So some of these people will go and complain to the rangers. The next thing, rangers come up to us and say, we've received complaints that your group is making noise and littering the floor. So he's essentially saying that the white people are lying about this, but at the same time, he's admitting that they are making noise. He says, we're not breaking any rules, but because we're exploring the mountains our way, I think it's a shock to the system for most folks. So exploring the mountains our way means playing loud music and littering. Recently, The group went up to Pentland Hills with about 60 colleagues from across Black Professionals Scotland corporate partners, and they were able to raise over £2,000 for charities, including Parkinson's UK. Mr. Adeyemi says his group enjoys playing music while on their treks, which he admits isn't the case for most hikers. So, I mean, he's admitting that he is actually playing loud music and then complaining that white people have complained about him playing loud music. He said, "For most folks, hiking is about going up quietly and coming down quietly. For us, we're playing music all the way to the point where you don't feel like you're going up the mountain." Well, what is the point of being up the mountain then if you're going to make a lot of noise and pretend it's the city? The point of going up the mountain is to get away from the city. He says folks have confidently stopped and told us to turn our music off. I think, why should I turn off my music? Well, if you're in Rome, you should behave as the Romans do, surely. He says just because white Scottish people enjoy nature one way, that doesn't mean black people have to enjoy it exactly the same way. It's their condescending tone that they use to speak to us, telling us not to litter and to only leave our footprints. Well, that must be because they have left litter. Nobody's going to say don't litter if there's no litter that's been left. Recently, I went out with a mostly white hiking group and we experienced none of it. Well, that's because the white hiking group weren't playing loud music and weren't dropping litter. There were 60 of us, but nobody came to tell us to only leave our footprints or give any condescending comments. I thought that was interesting. We went on a hike with no drama. The environmentally conscious father, who always carries a plastic bag to collect their rubbish in, believes that the incidents are racially motivated, with hikers assuming that black people will litter. Mr. Adeyemi said, "I think it's down to the colour of our skin. It's not that we're a big group, it's that we are black. So it's not down to the loud noise that they're making, it's not down to the litter they're dropping, it's just down to the colour of their skin. People see us and think they're going to be dropping litter. I don't know why that is. There might be this mentality that a bunch of black people coming together means they are going to cause trouble." Well, they are causing trouble, aren't they? He's written this piece claiming that the white people that complain about the litter and the loud noise are only doing so because they hate the colour of his skin. I guess he must be saying that people really do enjoy seeing lots of litter on the mountain, and they really do enjoy hearing lots of hip-hop, and they're only saying they don't like it because they don't like the colour black. He says there are multiple incidents on every hike, whether it's getting aggro or grief. It's non-stop. We would just be out by the lake and have rangers show up saying, "We've had complaints about noise." I don't think the rangers are used to seeing people like us come to enjoy the outdoors, and that's part of the problem. We find that 99% of the time, the rangers will come back and apologise. I just think, don't tell me sorry. When you got that complaint, you should have shut it down. Well, why should they shut it down? If people are making complaints, it's because there are genuine reasons to make the complaint. And what Mr. Adeyemi is saying is that they should just ignore these complaints because they're black. In addition, he believes there may also be cultural differences at play, saying that Africans tend to be more animated and speak louder. So again, he's admitting, yes, they make a lot more noise than white people. And white people go there for the peace and quiet. They don't want to hear any noise, do they? Mr. Adeyemi shared his experiences on LinkedIn to call out what the group have faced. He said, "I spoke up about this because you hear a lot of people say that Scotland isn't racist. And I'm thinking, I think you're high, mate. I'm not saying Scotland's racist, but there are racist people in Scotland. I want to get that point across to people." So he's essentially saying that these people are racist because they don't like the noise that this black group are bringing into the mountains. He says, "I want people to understand what they can do to be anti-racist. When people complain or do things that are intolerant, others should speak up." So he's saying people should speak up because people should not be intolerant of loud music and littering. They should just allow that because that's just something that black people do. "If there's anything you can do when you hear racist comments, you should say it's discriminatory. It's racist. These incidents haven't put me off hiking. It's made me realise that society has a long way to go." Where would we be if we didn't have people of foreign extraction telling us how to enjoy our outdoors, eh? Or where would we be without people from abroad telling us how to live our lives here in Britain? Do we do that over there in their countries? No, we don't. LinkedIn commenters came to Dr. Adeyemi's support and offered their sympathy. One wrote, "I read this and I'm just sad. Sad because a similarly simple activity of going into the open space and enjoying the wild, you are once again reminded you don't belong there. It is tiring." Another commented, "This is BS, but sadly the reality for many, every single day. Keep doing what you do, and let's keep sharing stories to show it for what it is." Well, I would be interesting to see if some people would actually write in and say whether they saw this group dropping a litter. And they've already admitted that they were playing loud music. I mean, it surprises me that people will put up with this and believe this instead of thinking, well, surely they must have upset these other hikers in some way. They've admitted that they're being noisy. They've admitted that they're playing music. They haven't admitted that they dropped litter, but surely they must have done. Otherwise, nobody would be complaining about it. Nobody's going to go and say, oh, this group, this hiking group, left all this litter here. If there's no litter there, are they? Surely they had to have had the evidence to show the ranger in the first place. I mean, this is just a huge scam to try and get white people to go along with bad behaviour in the mountains, I think. And we keep seeing these attempts from people of colour to invade spaces that are normally seen as white spaces, where white people go to get away from multiculturalism, and then they'll invade that space and claim that we should be pleased to have them there and we should be making all these exceptions for them, when really if they want to go into the countryside, they should be quiet, shouldn't they? They shouldn't be playing loud music up the top of mountains. They should be trying to get along with the other hikers, and I'm sure the other hikers would be quite happy to see them there if that was the case. But it's not the case, is it? They're leaving litter and they're making loud noise. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.